library for our kids, Fred and Ted Go Camping. It's written by P.D. Eastman, and it's the same guy who wrote Are You My Mother? So, but Fred and Ted Go Camping, and I thought, you know, because they're always doing the opposite things. It's one of those books that teach opposites. I thought, you know, I could, Fred and Ted Go Camping. That's pretty much what this week is about. In the midst of it, when Jesus comes home to his family, and he gets amazed at their unbelief. So far, everyone in the stories, when they are amazed, they're amazed at Jesus' works. And finally, Jesus is amazed. He's amazed at unbelief. I thought it was like Fred and Ted. Fred and Ted Go Camping. This is my own version, by the way, not P.D. Eastman's. But Fred and Ted go out camping, and one day when they're out camping, they go for a big hike. And it's a really strenuous, difficult hike. And they come to a really narrow ledge as they're traversing up the side of the mountain. And suddenly, the trail beneath them crumbles. And they plummet down. Now, it happens that they're kind of at this strange part of the mountain where one goes down one side, the other goes down another. Just the way that the contours happen. And they both land on ledges. Fred lands on one. Hard to see, difficult. No one's really going to tell that he's down there. Ted goes to a lower ledge, close to a rather raging stream at the moment. A little easier to see, but still pretty tough to find. And then it begins to rain. It begins to pour down buckets on them. And the sun goes down and it gets cold. And they get soaked, they've got nothing to cover themselves with. They don't know where anyone is. They're banged and bruised up. So finally, Ted, a devout churchgoer, prays to God for deliverance and for saving in this situation. Fred does the same thing. The interesting thing, of course, is that Fred has been somewhat skeptical all his life. But he figures if any time for him to pray, it's now. Well, they're there throughout the night, and the rain is pouring down, and they're freezing, and they're shivering. And the problem, of course, is that for Ted, that little babbling brook that was next to him has started to rise, and it's getting closer to his ledge. And he fears jumping off into it because he doesn't know the currents or the rocks or what's going to happen. Fred is freezing. Now, it just so happens that on his bag he had a little reflecting badge, and someone had been across the valley. And just it happened that the person on the trail across the valley saw Fred's little reflecting badge. Saw that little bit of light. And he went to check it out. And there, he sees Fred huddled on that ledge. Calls out the rescue squad. Right? Gets them out there. They rappel down. They lift them up. And they bring them back. Fred tells him about his friend Ted. I don't know what happened to my friend Ted. Well, Fred has been over on the other ledge praying. The water's rising up. They find him. And they lower a rope down to him. They figure they can lower a rope to him and they can get him and say, Fred, or Ted, I mean, grab on, we'll pull you up. He says, no, don't worry about it. I've prayed to God. God's going to save me. He says, I've got faith. They figure he must be surely hypothermic at this point, and he's not thinking straight. Well, the water continues to rise. Fred is whisked off to the hospital, and Ted stays on the ledge. The water starts to rise up, and he's clinging now to the walls because the water has risen up to his waist, and he's kind of holding on. And he's still praying, God, you've got to save me. Well, soon they bring about they manage to get a boat down that brook, to get down there and save him. He says, get in the boat. He says, no, don't worry about it. God's going to save me. Well, they can't keep the boat there that long arguing with him. So finally, they brought in a helicopter. By now, poor Ted is clinging to the wall, and it's up to his nose, and he's about to be whisked away. And the helicopter, they drop a basket to him. They say, get in the basket now. God's going to save me. Well, with the wind and the conditions, the helicopter has to move out. Sure enough, Ted, poor Ted, slips off the wall and drowns in the river. Well, they go and they have to go tell Fred. Fred, we have to tell you bad news. Ted died. He drowned. He wouldn't let go. He kept claiming God was going to save him. But you, look at what God has done for you. Fred said, God didn't save me. You guys saved me. Okay, they thought. Well, poor Ted, as he dies and he goes and speaks with the big guy upstairs, says, God, I pray, save me. And you didn't do anything. He says, what are you kidding me? I sent a rescue squad, a boat, and a helicopter. And you didn't get in any of them. I don't know what sometimes our idea of faith is, or how we trust, or what we think God is up to. But that somehow God is going to work outside of the strange ways that our world provides. But it is interesting in our text, Jesus, it says, because of their unbelief, Jesus couldn't do any deeds of power. Well, except for maybe he did cure a few people. But really, he couldn't do anything really big. He's amazed at their unbelief. Unbelief. Unfaith. Untrust. All of these are really rooted in how we view the world. Fred viewed the world, look, there we are. You guys saved me, God didn't do anything. Ted actually had pretty much the same view that those people were outside of God's activity. Let's be amazed at unbelief in that way. Because if we are looking through the eyes of faith, through this lens of faith, we look at the world in an entirely different manner. We actually see a God who is active in this world, who's involved, who makes the trees grow and the water fall from the skies. St. Augustine, when he talks about Jesus' miracle in Cana, where he turns the water into wine, he said, Jesus just did what God does every day. We have a miracle that we get wine at all, because God causes the water to fall and the grapes to grow and all the processes that happen that bring about wine. It's about a fundamental view of our world. Is God here and active or not? And if so, what does that look like? Well, God's active in the processes of the world. Jesus sends the disciples out two by two. Go out. Anoint people. Heal them. Pray over them. Cast out demons. Be active in the world the way that I am active. But don't take anything. Rely on the people to take care of you. Because God is active, you see, in those people's lives. If we're going to rely simply on the goodness of human beings, we're in trouble. But you know, God can move even the hardest heart to help those in need. And really, all of us need help in that area, that hard heart part. We all have our skepticisms. We all question whether or not when we, you know, hand the quarters over to the guy who's asking for a cup of water, right? Is he really going to spend it on the quarter, on the water, or is he going to save it up and get something else? Well, going to go serve food for the hungry. Well, do some of these people really deserve it? Do they really need it? And yet God still uses us to feed those folks who are hungry. Just like God sent those disciples out into the, Jesus sent his disciples out into the world, even though they had their own issues. They didn't really get who Jesus was yet. And yet they go out. We don't get the end. We don't get the end when they come back. But they come back and they're amazed at where they see God active in the world. Because it's been God active through them. And it's the same life to which we are called. When we are baptized, Jesus just doesn't claim us so that when we die, we know we go to heaven. But in the waters of baptism, we are claimed as children of God precisely to be sent out. We talk about the church as being one, holy, Catholic, and apostolic. Apostolic nature is us being sent. Sent to proclaim a new way to look at the world. Sent to be part of God's activity. The ELCA's current motto, I've said this before, is God's work, our hands. And there's a lot of work out there that God wants to do. And we're all sent. In whatever ways we find, in whatever place we find ourselves, there's work God calls us to make God's love known in whatever realm we are. Sometimes it's a bit of a challenge. I've had a conversation with a guy who says, I work in an IT department where I do nothing but write some really obscure code for the company. I said, okay, that's a little bit of a tough one, but you'd be a good coworker, right? You'd be diligent. Keep an eye out for injustice in the workplace. But you have people all around you. People hurting. People questioning. People of all sorts of questions. About God. About what this world is up to. Engage them. Don't be quiet. Don't have to be obnoxious about it, but engage them. Seek out a good relationship with them. We're all sent. And as I told the kids in the children's sermon, sometimes we don't know where that ultimate destination is going to put us, where we're going to be. And yet, God provides for us. First and foremost, God provides for us as we are here. God gives us that identity, child of God, that place where faith begins. God nourishes us and sustains us at the altar. And we're booted out. Every service, go in peace, serve the Lord. And we all say, thanks be to God, mainly because we've been formed that way. That's just what we say. But we give thanks for the ways that we are called now to serve out in the world. Because we know it's a gift. What a wonderful gift it is to go and to do God's work in the world. Because we have this lens of faith that we're looking at the world through. We know God's at work. We experience it. I hope we experience it in our lives in many and various ways. In our jobs, in our homes, in our vacations and in our rest. Find God there and present and working. Jesus is amazed at the people's unbelief. We are continually amazed at Jesus' activity in the world as the crowds were long ago. Let us continue to strive for that amazement in all that we do. As Jesus works through us to make known God's love. Thanks be to God.